grease, steel, cracked iron, and bayou grass. Sun's heading creekside, days fading fast. Are you really digging for peace, or is that just a lie you tell to help you sleep?
Sure that. Welcome to the Wrecking Yard. I'm Jerry Wayne Longmire. Y'all, presumably still y'all, all are welcome here in the Church of Internal Combustion. We just ask that you show up with an open heart. Woo, church is Sunday morning. Sunday morning. We had a little bit of a gully washer come through Houston, Texas over the last day. And got particularly gnarly last night when I was driving home from the Sam Houston Race Park to get to my home after the shows. Woo. Well, I have sung a lot of praise about that little Mazda car, but I can tell you one particular time I'm not a fan of it is in a gully washer like that. That little booger is the hydroplaning in this son of 50 I ever drove in my life. I don't know how many times I got it loose on Hardy Toll Road last night trying to get back here. But it is pretty much rained for 24 hours here yesterday. And everything's just saturated and soaked. It's starting to dry up today. But it's a cool 70 degrees outside. I got my little thermal on. It feels nice. I'm cold natured. I don't like to be cold, but I don't ever get to wear anything thick, and this feels nice. I'm feeling comfy this morning. My sinus has been, I think that weather change brought some sinus stuff in. I've been a little choked up last day or two. Ooh, doggy. Excuse me. My goodness. No, it feels like a whole bunch of people I know just got COVID again. Which I thought we were done with that. I just didn't even realize that was still a thing. But yeah, I know like 9 people with COVID right now. And every time somebody coughs, everybody's like, "Oh, you're getting COVID again." Like, not me. I'm vaccinated. I ain't had nary a problem with it. So. Okie dokie. Where are we at today? Oh, man, I was telling y'all about this thing last week. I was going to show it to you. In fact, I'm actually going to use it. The Freedom Knife. The Knife of Freedom. Butcher of bureaucrats has dulled on me. We have cut so many cardboard boxes open full of Hot Wheels this year that we've taken the edge. Oh, that good old M-Tech knife. I know a lot of people like shit on M-Tech. I personally like M-Tech knives. But they don't hold an edge very long. Well, most Western steel is a little softer. That's just the way it goes. But you know what? It's been a pretty good knife. It's cut open a bunch of cardboard boxes full of a bunch of Hot Wheels for little kids. And I think we're going to use our little rolling sharpener just to clean up the edge a little bit, because it's the only sharpener I've used. Smith Systems. I don't know all the names of them, but I have a bunch of different ones. I have bought sharpener kits over the years trying to learn how to sharpen that. I just do not have that thing. Meanwhile, my papa would sit there with a whetstone and an old piece of leather strap and make a knife so sharp, I swear you could shave a billy goat with it. But I don't have it. My dad sit there sharpen with a whetstone. All my uncles. All the men in my life that I look up to for their skill sets and their just general knowledge about the world. I maybe don't necessarily agree with everything they do, but I did look up to them and have some sort of reverence for them. All them men can sharpen a knife, and that is where I fail. I have failed for 48 years to be able to sharpen a knife until I bought this stupid little... I swear, TikTok does those flash sales and they do all that thing where everybody's like advertising and you'll see like 8 people trying to sell the same product. It was one of those deals. And I was like, I saw these sharpeners and the little kid in me that always wants to be able to sharpen a knife was like, ooh, I got to get me one of them. But they were like 30 bucks or something then. And I was like, I ain't got to get one 30 bucks bad. You know, I was like thinking of like getting one like maybe 10 bucks bad, you know. And then sure enough, this thing didn't go so far down in price. I picked mine up for $4.99. I don't know what they run now. They've probably gone back up since then. It doesn't have a brand on it. I was trying to look for a brand. It's just some Chinese stuff. It's made in China. Can't see because the barcode. It just says Roland Sharpener right there. And it's literally, this is all that's in the box. I bought the cheapest kit available. No frills, no extra. It's got this little magnet block, 20 degree sharpening on one side, 15 degree sharpening on the other side. I've been using it on our kitchen knives. We had some really nice kitchen knives that my dad gave Rachel as a Christmas present. Man, probably close to 13 years ago. And we've used pissed at them. They're just dull. They're just Faberware. Nothing crazy. I took this stupid little sharpener, and those knives will cut. I mean, you take a piece of paper, you get after that meat, them knives, it's like doing surgery now out there. I was prepping my pork ribs last night, and so I'm going to smoke me some pork ribs today. I'm trying out. East Oak sent me their new 30-inch smoker. They sent me one last year, and I really liked it. I used piss out of it. Well, I call it the Easy Bake because you just don't got to do nothing with it. I'm so sorry. Anyways, they didn't reach out to me. Sent me a new one this year. They were so excited because I guess they sold a bunch of them last year when I mentioned them. And, in fact, my manager told me the other day that I got commissions in there from last year's sales that I didn't even know about. I just did it to get the free smoker, to be honest with y'all. And I liked it. And so then they sent me the new one this year. It's got legs on it. It's pretty cool. It's like, it's actually kind of perfect. I love the changes they made on it this year. And they put better buttons on it. Easier to reach, easier to touch. Last year, it was like a flat, shiny surface with those like kind of subsurface buttons. And you kind of got to mash on them. And I just did these. This year, it's got like little raised buttons on matte finish. And it's way easier to find by fingertip because I smoke late in the night a lot of times in the dark and shit. So they put a little better probe on it. They change up the way the heating element sits in it a little bit. And it's a little easier to keep clean. So I'm really excited about it. Anyway, I'm going to smoke me some St. Louis spare ribs. Do me some little St. Louis style ribs, which is one of my favorites as far as pork goes. I did some beef back ribs last week, and I'd never done beef back ribs before. I kind of always wanted to try them, but I didn't know a lot about it. I've been trying to kind of teach myself stuff about it. I didn't know that beef back ribs come or cut off the back of the ribeye, the rib roast, right? So even though beef back ribs don't have like all the meat on the top and bottom, you know, on the top of them, like a plate rib or what they call dinosaur ribs do, those are cut from a little lower on the bottom. The back ribs, all the meat that's in between them is basically just more ribeye. My heavens, them ribs turned out phenomenal. And there's not a lot of math to you. You take them till they're about 205, 203 degrees, and the bone just slips out of them, and these old ass teeth can give to town. You know, fantastic ribs. So I'm gonna do some pork ribs today. This thing, I'm gonna show you kind of how it works, just because I wanted to tell y'all about. Anyway, so this is your other thing. It's this little roller. It's got these rubber. You take these caps off. It's got kind of like rubber O-ring around it. And I don't remember what the grits are, but you got a little rougher size. That's your cutting side. And then you got your polished side, right? And it's a pretty simple concept. You take your blade. My blade's got a 20 degree edge on it. most of your Western pocket knives and most of your Western steel is going to have a 20 inch, I mean, not a 20 inch, 20 degree cut on it. Because it's a little softer steel and a 20 degree cut is a little less resistant to nicks and damage. It's not so thin. Most of your Japanese steel is going to like have like 15, and some of your high-end German knives and stuff like that are going to have like a 15 degree, from what I understand. Feel free to come and tell me what I'm wrong about in the in the comments, because I'm sure I got some of that wrong. I don't proclaim to be a knife expert. But anyway, you just, it's a magnet. You just stick it to there, and then you roll this back and forth on this side on a level surface until you get your edge cut down where you want it. And then you flip it around, you take that smooth side and just right back and forth, right? Slow, it's not nothing you get in a hurry about. I've learned that slow and steady wins the race with this little sharpener. So it's pretty cool little machine. It is Jerry Wayne proof. I can finally sharpen some of my knives. I've been kind of getting after all my old pocket knives that were, since all the men in my family that were real good at sharpening have died, except my dad. And I've been left with a lot of dull knives because I did not pick up that particular skill set from any of them as much as I thought I was going to at some point. We have had, been a good week. I did two shows out at Sam Houston Race Park. We had a few Wrecking Yard people out there. I met a fellow named Jeff and his wife last night, come out with some friends. They were a good bunch of people. I had a great time. Truthfully, the Friday night show was my favorite show. It was a smaller crowd. We only had about 40 people, but they were just, they were there for it. Saturday night's crowd was a little, there was a couple of tight asses in that crowd. There was a couple that sat right on the front row, right to the left of me. And I watched them, Barry Laminack was host, he's the house MC over there. He was hosting it. Barry's funny. I've worked with Barry enough that I've seen Barry work all kind of crowds. Barry's funny. And these people just stonewalled Barry. Just stared at Barry like he didn't matter the whole time he was on stage. And then Lotto Marie, another good friend of mine, fantastic comedian here out of Houston, Texas. She's a powerhouse. And she got up there and worked that crowd, whooped shit out of that crowd. And then people, same way, just kind of stonewalled her. And it took me, I think I was 20 minutes into my show before I got a laugh out of that dude sitting there. I was like, man, why in the hell? I think they must have had something else going on that night. But I've often joked that Saturday night crowds are not my crowd because people that wait Saturday night to go out ain't the kind of people that I always was growing up. I'm more people come out on Thursday night. Thursday night crowd, that's my crowd. People come out on Thursday night, make some bad decisions, and have to deal with it at work the next day. That's my kind of people, you know. We hope that's not too loud in anybody's ear. Give you guys a quick Ophelia update. We have a real live, raring to go hoss cat. That cat has absolutely been an inspiration to me. She went to the surgeon Friday, and the surgeon said that her right leg is working so good he don't even want to do surgery on it, that she's probably always going to have a limp or leg's going to be a little jacked up always, but he said she's got feeling in it, she's using it, she's extending the claws on it, and she's putting weight on it, and he doesn't want to do any surgery on that because he thinks that she's going to be just fine. He said maybe later on we might have to do some surgery to release some pressure in the bone to allow the bones to develop a little better, but right now, he doesn't want to do anything. Her left arm, her left front leg is healing up just fine. She's putting weight on that. He said she's cleared to play and go and do all the things a kitten does. Her little wounds have healed. She had this gash on her neck that it was like a pocket of degloved skin. That was the thing that was like full of the maggots and everything. It was one of the ones. And that thing has healed up. It looks like a little paper cut. And the hair's even growing back on the skin, which is just amazing to me. Her little right front arm, which was also all degloved and the skin was all torn loose on, was full of maggots. And they had got up. The maggots had also started getting up in between her toes. All that has scabbed up and healed over. And she's actually growing hair on that freaking arm again. We thought she was going to have a little naked arm. If we really thought she was going to have it amputated. And she is full of beans and bus tickets and ready to go. That little kitten has won everybody in my home's hearts. And we all take turns with her. And she is just a fantastic new member of my family. I am just tickled to death about her recovery. So little Ophelia is doing fantastic. And I mean, well, what the hell else you want? You know? Whew, that cold water's good. I'm a little bit airy-eyed. I had a few drinks last night and stayed out on the porch about 2 o'clock in the a.m. hanging out with Miss Rachel. And not really doing anything important, just sort of, when I do shows local and I get to come home and hang out with her, it's so much better than on the road when I usually just go back to an empty hotel room and try to go to sleep. So it's always nice. I come home, hang out with Mama after the show. Kind of reminds us of the old days when I was running around doing shows all over Houston and Southeast Texas and driving home as soon as I could after the show. I hang out with my lady. We had us a little bit of a little chill time last night. It was a good time. Got back in the gym this week. I hadn't been in the gym in about 2, maybe 3 weeks. I hurt my hip. My hip's been all tore up and I just couldn't hardly even go. Been having trouble just honestly just walking around. And so I got back in the gym this week. My chiropractor's been working on my hip. Hip feels better and better and better. And I know a lot of people don't believe in chiropractic, and that's okay. I don't need you to believe in it for it to work for me. I like the chiropractor because it's cheaper and I can get in and out of there quicker than the doctor, and it gives me some instant relief every time. I wouldn't go in there if I had a broken leg or a heart condition, but when it's muscle and bone stuff that's just feels like things are out of place, yes, I run over there to the chiropractor, let her fix me up, because I think the visit's like $20 in and out the door. I'm walking better for a couple days anyways. So I like doing that stuff. Also, oh man, I found a part for my Cadillac. I've been hitting up all these people. I'm following parts cars on Facebook Marketplace. And every time I hit up these people, these parts cars, I'm like, hey man, I need the electronic brake control module. It's a little thing that clips on the back of the ABS module. I need that module. And no, it's gone. ABS module's gone off this car. That's the first thing everybody buys. They buy the head off that 3.6 and they buy that module and the ABS module and the body control module, because apparently that one's real hard to find. And that's one controls your air conditioner and all kind of crazy. That body control module is about the dumbest thing anybody's ever put on a car. Controls everything. Anyways, your BCM goes out, boy, you start screwing up, or you're going to run into a mess of problems like you ain't never heard of in your automotive life. I swear to heavens, it's the wildest thing that somebody dreamed up, put on a daggum car. But anyways, this dude, I hit him up about a month ago. He never responded. You know, like a lot of Facebook Marketplace ads. He'd never responded. And then he did finally this week. And he said, sorry, I've been out of town. But he said, I have three of these SRXs. And all it was, he's a body shop. He has a little body shop over here off Little York Road. Right here, like, the whole time, this part was a mile from my house. I've been searching junkyards in California and calling guys in Idaho with junkyards. And the whole time, the part I needed was a mile, 3 miles from my house, right? Right over in Little York Road, this guy has a body shop. He finally hits me up. He says, hey, man, I don't know what these cars have. If you just want to bring your tools, come over here. He said, I'll give you that whole module, everything you want for $75. So I went and I crossed my fingers, loaded my tools up, went over there the other morning, and lo and behold, one of them SRXs is a 2015, which will fit my car. It's the same generation SRX, same setup, same everything. One of those cars had dadgum EBCM on it and ABS. I went ahead, I took the body control module, I took the EBCM, I took the ABS module. Anything I thought on that car I might need in the coming future, I jacked off that car. And I think I walked out of there spending about $150 and couldn't be more pleased, and got to brush up on some of my work Spanish. So it was a good morning. I got my part. I haven't put it on and flashed it yet, but I've been reading some, and there's a lot of evidence out there to say that I may not even need to flash it. It may just be a bolt. I may be able to just clip this module on and fix these ABS lights. So later on today, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to change that EBCM out and see if we don't got a fixed Cadillac. And then if that still don't work, I'm going to take it over to my good friend David Doig, who y'all know and love. And me and Dave is going, we're going to flash that thing to the VIN number and see if that don't solve the problem. But either way, I'm just tickled pink to finally have my frickin' part. You know, anybody that's done that kind of search for that long for a part, you know what it's like, man. It's just, feels like a never-ending story trying to find something when nobody has one. I used to know this guy that restored crazy old cars like Hispano Suizas and like Jay Leno type stuff. And this dude literally had a machine shop attached to his house because he would have to make parts for these cars. And I was getting to the point where I was wondering if I was going to have to open up a module shop here in the wrecking yard and learn how to build modules to fix this stupid car. So glad that is not the case, because it feels a little out of my wheelhouse. Man, I told you, I had such a good time last weekend telling y'all my fishing stories, and I forgot one of my favorite fishing stories ever, and it just still makes me laugh. I've heard this story. I experienced this story as a five-year-old, but I have heard this story told so many times by my father. Still tickles me to this day. But for a very short period of time, when I was about 5 years old, we lived in an apartment complex over in Longview, Texas. And I don't remember what the deal was, why we were living there, but it was right until my parents got their little trailer house out in Lever's Chapel. And we was living in this little apartment complex. I remember this apartment complex for a couple reasons, but specifically, it had a little lake attached to it. And my dad, one morning, decided to take me out there. We was going to go fishing at the lake. And he had me a little Snoopy fishing rod, right? A little bobber, hook, bait on it. And I had cast it out there in that little lake, and he had his Daiwa ultralight. He was bass fishing, them plastic worms, right? Now, there was a bunch of ducks in this lake. It was kind of like a duck lake, duck pond in an apartment complex. Y'all probably seen one before. My dad said he was walking up and down the bank fishing. And Said I was being pretty quiet. Remember I told you, he always said he could just leave me somewhere and I'd be just fine. He didn't have to worry about me getting in no trouble or anything. Said I was pretty quiet down there. He was just up and down that lake fishing. He said after about 30, 45 minutes, he lost his lure, whatever it was he was fishing with. I think it was a plastic worm. So he come back down there where I was at with the tackle box. And he said there was a whole pile of ducks around me. And all amongst them ducks were little chewed up bits of plastic worms. He had had one of them packages of the plastic worms in a little see-through package. And I had decided to feed them to the ducks. And he'd come down there and I'd done fed all his plastic worms. Them daggum ducks. He said there was just bits of blue and black plastic worm all over the ground where them ducks had just gobbled them plastic worms up. Maybe they scented, I don't know. I always have questions about this story. Like, how far away from me were you? I mean, if you were far enough away from a five-year-old that you couldn't hear ducks going crazy, that doesn't seem like, is that too far away to hear a splash? Right? Don't know. I don't know. Parenting was different in the 80s, man. That's all I can tell you. It was a different time. That's what everybody says when something seems horrifying about the past. It was a different time. It was a different time. David Bowie slept with underage girls. It was a different time. The 70s was wild. Everybody always has a justification like that for everything. It was a different time. I'm guilty of using it myself, for sure. Ooh, that is already looking better. Getting a little mirror finish there. That daggone blade. That's good. We got a few Hot Wheels to open at the end of the show. Today, I'm going to tell y'all a story about a mythical beast. The Beast of Lake Conroe. Some of you day oneers been around a while. Y'all know back about 2011, for a period of time, I was the maintenance man for a condo property on Lake Conroe called April Point South. And this was, like I said, it was about 2011. Junie was born. I think we was pregnant with Noah. He was on the way. Or I was about to find out we was pregnant with Noah. This is about the time, I think. It's about time I found out I was going to have two kids, which came as quite a surprise and shock to me, if you can imagine. I used to tell a joke about it on stage. I'd say, that first kid was pretty magical. Junior came along, was slept through the night straight from the hospital. That baby was easy. I always call the first baby the trick baby, because the first baby's usually easy. The second one's where things get difficult. And sure enough, after work one day, we lived in this little place called LaSalle Oaks. I think it might be called Westlake now or something like that. Right off 105, had a little lake. Had its own little lake that I used to go fishing in. I had a canoe. I used to take my canoe out there and go fishing in the mornings at lake before I went to work. I take that canoe. Man, I have to remember to tell y'all my canoe story about Lake Conroe one day. I have a great canoe story about Lake Conroe. About the day I thought I was going to just go out and canoe all over that lake. Anyways, but yeah, they had a little lake in this property, and I used to go down there and fishing my little canoe. It was a cool little place, man. We had some good times when we lived there. I don't remember why I was telling y'all about where I was living. Anyways, it was about 6 minutes from work. I literally would get out on 105, go straight down 105. Boom, I was at the property. I was at work. It was probably closest I've ever lived to a job. When I was trying to find my way, I'd only had this maintenance contract a short period of time. The man that had it before me was a guy that everybody called Big Country, Roy Wilkinson. Me and Roy Wilkinson were good friends, still good friends this day. Not great friend. I hadn't talked to him in a while, but every once in a while I'll reach out to old Roy, see how he's doing, old Big Country. He's kind of retired up in Cold Spring now. But Roy and Kathy were just real good people. I had worked for them when they had that maintenance contract, and it had come to a point where they needed me to... Sorry, I saw something crazy going on across the street. Man, I need to go over and talk to him. My neighbor across the street, man, he's been ill. They come pick him up by ambulance. And I talked to his daughter a little bit. He's the old cholo. He's like 80-year-old cholo dude. Cool as shit. Just love old dude. Drives old beat the shit Cadillac. He's got this. Looks like it's about a 88 Broham, and it's got a different color paint from everything he's bounced it off of. And he's looking good, though. He's walking good. I might go over there and visit with him a little later this afternoon once I get out here doing stuff. Where was I? Roy and Kathy. Roy and Kathy was good people. I'd worked for them while they had that maintenance contract. And then Roy had some point, his other business was taking off so much, he didn't want to keep the contract anymore, and he got them to turn it over to me. And I had started a DBA and taking over that maintenance contract for him, but it was kind of, in the beginning, the contract was real vaguely worded and so forth that the maintenance department was responsible for everything on that property. We were kind of over the landscape, and we was over, and they had just fired their landscaper, so I was interviewing landscapers and trying to get somebody out there, and we ended up hiring somebody from the old landscaping crew, a guy named Jesus, that ended up taking over the landscaping contract for us, thankfully. And me and Jesus was pretty good buddies. I used to tell stories about him. Jesus ran the landscaping company. A fellow named Angel did all the sprinkler work, or ran our sprinkler system, you know, did all the repairs on our sprinkler system. And then Jesus had a helper that helped him run his thing, named Moses, right? So I used to regularly eat lunch with Jesus, Angel, and Moses. I always tell people, boy, I feel pretty safe at lunch. I feel pretty good. I got Angel, Moses, Jesus on my side. You know what I mean? Probably a safe lunch. They was a good bunch of dudes. Liked them. But yeah, that contract, I was pretty much responsible for everything at that party. I did not finish telling y'all. So Junie had been born. Sorry, I'm a little scattered this morning. Junie had been born. We were living there. We had that little, we lived in that property, had that little lake and had a little park. And Rachel calls me after work one day, sometime 2011. I suspect whatever 9 months before July is when he was born, and calls me after work. She says, I got a surprise for you. And I was like, hell yeah. What'd I do? Yeah, I mean, I'm a pretty good old boy. I deserve a surprise every now and then. I was excited. She's like, meet me and Junie at the park when you get off work. So I run down there to the park. She's got this little bag on the picnic table, and it looks... And I had been wanting this new video game called Call of Duty, and it looked about the size bag, might have a video game in it. And I said, oh boy, I done got me that Call of Duty. Boy, what did I do to deserve this? And had some tissue paper in it, and I reached off in the bag, and I pulled out a stick she peed on. And when I realized what that stick meant, I said, oh shit, and that is not the way you respond to find out you're going to be a father again. At least not the second child. Maybe the third child's okay. Second child, not. But it was because I just instantly freaked out and was like, oh my God, I barely got this one paid for. Now I gotta get it. You know, it was just dad mode, freaking out. So this is all about that time period. So 2011, learning how to be a father. And for the first time, I'm kind of running a business where it's all on me. Everything's on me. I'm rebuilding boardwalk pieces out there for this property. I'm fixing people's drywall. There's a lot of air conditioning leaks out there, so I have to go out there and fix AC pans and fix drywall. There's a lot of roof leaks, so I got to go out there and do repairs on the roof. 2 and 3 story condos. This is before I fell off a roof. I used to go in these 3 story condos all the time to do repairs, flashing repairs, all kind of stuff. I'm doing a little bit of all of it out there. Building little staircases for some of the bulkheads. Walking the property every morning. I'm getting in pretty good shape because I'm walking the property every morning. And this property, it's kind of like on a peninsula that sticks out in the Lake Conroe. And it's part of there's a bigger property called April Sound. And it's a bunch of real nice houses. And there's a big country club and a golf driving range that goes out in the water. And country club swimming pool, all that kind of stuff. And the country club's at the end of there's a big long road goes through April Sound, almost to the lake. And it's like goes down a hill. And then at the end of that hill is that country club right there on the water. And if you take a left, you curve around another little road, take you off an 8 Point South. That's where those condos were. And that's the part I managed for those condos. In between those condos and that golf club, there's this little drainage creek, right? It comes off a lake and it's just a little shallow creek and it just kind of runs up into the woods a little bit and dies off, turns into drainage. That's all what separates them. There's no fence, anything like that. Condos was about 30 years old. They've been built as cheap vacation condos, and they weren't really designed for people living in them full time. And one of the things that had kind of happened at that condo property was folks in Montgomery County in the local area had figured out that it was cheaper to go out there and buy one of them condos and stick their elderly in it than it was go put them in a nursing home. Right? Now, of course, they didn't have medical care out there or anything like that. And in the beginning, this is what I noticed as the maintenance man out there. They would buy the condo. They would get it fixed up. They usually pay me to do some work on it, fix it up. They'd move their elderly person into it. And for the first, 4 weeks, for the first 4 weeks, they'd be out there visiting them all the time, making sure they had whatever they need, yada, yada, yada. And then those visits would taper off. And then after a while, every once in a while, you see a grandkid come out there, son or daughter come out there when there was a problem. But then they pretty much just left their elderly people out there. So there's a whole lot of elderly people living in these condo properties. And there was condos right on the water. And on this peninsula, there was a big, long boardwalk. I think it's about a mile long. It's a good 5,000 foot, I'll tell you that. That wraps around that little peninsula and then stops when it gets to another property called April Point North, which was kind of like the ghetto of April Sound. That was like the really old lake houses, condos that were just in rough shape. A lot of duplexes and a lot of weird stuff going on at April Point North. I'm not even sure they had an HOA in April Point North, to be honest with you. But I worked directly for the property management company at the time. And the fellow that owned that property management company was a guy named Steve Durham. And we got along all right, and Susan Rohde worked under him, and she was like the account manager for my account. Me and Susan got along fantastic. We're still friends to this day. You may have heard me talk about Susan's son. Susan's son, Dylan Rohde, was in a horrible car accident when he was a teenager. Ended up, a little girl got killed in it. The girl driving got killed. Dylan ended up all kind of damage. Ended up some brain damage, had short-term memory loss. He was kind of like working with that fish in Finding Nemo. He would forget stuff really quickly. Dory, couldn't remember her name. He was kind of like working with Dory. I would send him to the truck to get something, and he would literally text me from the truck asking me what it was. And this is about the time period he's working. Old Dylan's working with me. Dylan was one of my first employees. Dylan was my very first employee. And he was a good kid, and I liked that kid. And sadly, he died of an overdose sometime during COVID. He got off in dope real bad, and he didn't survive it. But I always liked that kid, and I hate what happened to him. He was a good kid and enjoyed the time he worked for me, even when he frustrated me, because he's kind of funny. Let's see how we're doing here. Whoa, what you want, baby? That's what I was looking for. Get the old Freedom knife back in shape. See how easy that was? Sitting here chit-chat with y'all. Sharpened the hell out of the Freedom knife. I'm telling you, this little rolling sharper is a godsend for me. And I don't have a link for you because I didn't keep track of it. I just bought it to play with for myself. And I'm not really in the affiliate business. But if you just search Roland Sharpener in the TikTok shop, and I'm sure anywhere else you can buy cheap Chinese goods, you can find one. So it's about time old Dylan's working for me. He's a decent little hand. He ain't got much of a skill set, but he's good at following directions sometimes. And I would get all kind of weird calls out there. I would get my phone that people could get a hold of me come day and night. And because I was only 5 or 6 minutes from the property, I was kind of on call. And I'd get weird stuff. Y'all know later on there was a huge fire out there, and I was called in to deal with all that. So at the time, I pretty much reported to Steve Durham and Susan Rohde, and they had a little office. It was IMC was the name of the company they worked for. And I knew most of the board members. Most of them lived in the condos, like actually on the lakefront. And I knew most of them, dealt with them. I got along with the board members. There's a guy named Tackleberry. Mr. Tackleberry was president of the board just right up until he died. But he was the partner in Dooley Tackleberry Safety, which big safety companies all over the United States. And Mr. Tackleberry was always giving me stuff. He was bringing me stuff from the safety company. Gloves, a poncho. I had the best ponchos. Like all weather for pressure washing. He brought me some good-ass ponchos. Big old fireman's gaff hook. Anything from the safety company, safety glasses, I had all that. Mr. Tackleberry took care of me on that. He did try to fire me before Christmas, previous to this, but it wasn't personal, it was business, as they say, which I won't get into that too much. Anyway, so I'm basically running all the maintenance for this property. I got a little office up at the top of the property that's got all my tools and supplies in it. It's like a little part office, part warehouse, you know, and got a little area up there where I can work on things. And I don't even think I had my golf cart yet. I think that's before they got me the golf cart. What I would do is every morning I'd get there first thing in the morning and I would go walk that property. I would walk all the way down that boardwalk. There was always the boardwalk was falling apart. And there was places where it was getting bad, and I would have to go mark those places and then put in a supply order for lumber and have to get that approved, and then go buy the lumber from 84 Lumber and go out there and patch this boardwalk up a little bit at a time until they finally had me rebuild most of the whole thing. So I'd walk that boardwalk every morning, look for loose boards, that kind of stuff. And then I would walk the rest of the property. So it was a good 30, 40 minutes of walking every morning, just checking out the property, talking to people. Folks would come up and tell me about stuff they noticed around the property, this and that. Look for water leaks. We had a lot of water leaks with the sprinkler system. So I would go out there and, you know, find a water leak and flag it and call Angel to come over and fix the water leak. And then I would go about my duties for the day. I usually had a couple drywall jobs lined up, fixing drywall for people, fixing doors for people, that kind of stuff in the early days. occasionally something would crazy would happen. There'd be some big damage I'd have to go out and fix. It was kind of a chill position, but everything was on me. I got all the phone calls. I got all the yelling. I got all the phone calls. And I spent a whole lot of time with them elderly people that their people had forgot them, because most of these people just wanted somebody to talk to. They'd come out in their porch. The old ladies come out in their porch and talk to me when they see me walking around. If the men saw me working on stuff, they'd get that walker and they'd come out there and tell me how they might would have done it back in their day. You know, give me that old, boy, I don't know. You know, I ain't trying to tell you how to do your business, but that ain't how I would have gone about that. You know, that kind of stuff. And I kind of loved them old men. You know, y'all know I like old dudes. You know, I have, my wife says I adopt them, you know, so it didn't bother me. You know, they'd come out there, tell me how they would have done it differently. That always tickled the shit out of me, actually. I like that kind of, I can't wait till I'm the old dude that just walk around bothering people. And like, boy, I ain't trying to tell you how to do your business, but that ain't how I'd gone about that. I look forward to that day. I hope I make it there. If I'm blessed, I will. One morning out there, I'm walking that property, and I get a call from my MC. And old Steve Durham says, Jerry, I know this sounds crazy as shit, but there's a lady that lived down on the end of the on the lake named Miss Benton. And he said, Miss Benton was crazy as shit. All right, this woman done told me some outlandish tales, right? Like, I knew she was a little, I wouldn't say delirious, but she was struggling to maintain her grasp on reality. Miss Benton was in her 80s and had lived a very rich and fancy life, and she still drove a big old fancy Cadillac. She was just some kind of something, and she was all 80 something years old, always dialed to the nines when she come outside. The makeup was always a little crooked, and, you know. She was struggling to hold on, bless her. Well, Miss Benton called me this morning, says she's seen an alligator right out there at the boardwalk. Big old alligator in the water. I said, an alligator? You know, I've been working on Lake Conroe a long time. I ain't seen no. I'd heard stories. So way up on the north end of the lake, there's like a, I think they call it Stubblefield. There's a real stumpy area, you know, kind of a natural area. And I heard stories about people seeing an alligator or two up there once. Well, we got shit ton of alligators in Texas, right? It's not unheard of. So I was like, man, I don't know about no alligator. But we're talking about down here by the country club and on the boardwalk. There's a lot of activity, a lot of jet skiing, a lot of fishing. There's people in the water swimming all the time. It's not the type of place alligators like to hang out. Animals like that generally tend to avoid our loud asses, right? Especially reptiles. So it's not the kind of place you think you're going to see an alligator, you know? It's like if somebody was like, oh, we was out here at Lake Tyler State Park, an alligator come up and sat at our picnic table and asked for a hot dog, you know? Like, it just didn't make sense to me. He said, Derry, she swears she's seen an alligator out there this morning. I said, Steve, you know that woman's about half blind. I said, we did have otters. I said, are you sure she ain't seen an otter or a beaver? We had beavers. Texas has some beavers. No, she swears it was alligators. So she was terrified. She's afraid to even go out on her patio. Now, I got to tell you, at the time where the water level was, the alligator would have had to somehow scale 3 foot of bulkhead straight up to get up to where her porch was and to get up to where the boardwalk was. Or the alligator would have had to maybe get a swimming start and leap 4 feet up in the air to get up on this boardwalk. But she swore the alligator was trying to get on the boardwalk. She's afraid to even take her little dog outside. She's afraid to go outside. Her dog peed on the floor. She wants somebody to come over and clean up that dog pee and fix her carpet. And she wanted to know what we was going to do about the alligator. I said, Steve, I don't think there's no damn alligator. He said, I don't either, but I need you to go over to Miss Benton's place and speak with her and just, you know, spray some Resolve, take your big old heavy-duty shop back over there and suck up that dog pee. Just do her a night. Sometimes we just did things like that, you know. just do her a nicety, okay? She thinks she saw something, she's scared, blah, blah, blah. I go over there, take my shop back. Boy, Miss Benton just rattled on about this alligator. She's terrified, her dog was barking, this alligator was going to just climb right up there and get her. I said, boy, Miss Benton, I don't know how that alligator could even get up there, you know? That would be hard for me to imagine. But I cleaned her little dog pee up and stuff. Helped her out. Miss Benton lived two condos over from Mr. Bob. I was already doing work. This is after I had my white Ford truck, my big old F-250. This is after I was already doing work. Me and Mr. Bob were kind of buddies. And sure enough, if Mr. Bob saw me outside, he had a job for me. Mr. Bob sees me over there talking to Miss Benton. He comes over there and listens to the whole story about the alligator. And Mr. Bob just grinning and being just as, he was just charming. He was being just as gracious to Miss Benton as he could be. And just, yeah, well, I wouldn't let that little dog out neither if I thought there was an alligator out here and that kind of thing. And Bob said, Jim, Jerry, when you get done with Miss Benton, I'd love for you to stop by a condo. I want to talk to you about a problem I'm having over here. Nothing in my condo will drain. I said, all right, Mr. Bob, I'll do it. So I called Steve back and said, hey, man, I took care of Miss Benton. I don't see nothing about no alligator. I'm going to go on with my day. He's like, yeah, yeah, that'll probably be the end of it, you know. Walk over to Mr. Bob's place, and Mr. Bob says, nothing in my condo will drain. Well, I know a little bit about plumbing, and we had some drainage problems out there. I said, well, everything stopped up in the whole condo. He said, yeah. He said, none of the toilets will flush. Upstairs toilets won't flush. The sinks won't flush. Yada, yada, yada. I said, boy, sounds like a vent problem, right? That's usually what it is, usually a vent problem. Now, these condos, I don't know what jackass builder built them, but they were, the plumbing systems on them were, it left something to be desired. And the only way you could reach, get to any of these vent pipes, there wasn't a clean out in the place. There's one clean out before the main, on the main sewage leaving the condo. And, the only other clean out in the vents was you, when you had to try to get clear out a vent, you had to go up in the attic or cut into a wall, get to a vent and try to blow that vent out with like an air compressor or something. So sure enough, I'm just sure every drain in the house is not working. That's a vent problem. There's a vent clogged up somewhere and it's probably the main vent. And the main vent comes off the main bathroom downstairs and the kitchen downstairs. They're usually backed up together the way these condos were built so that it's one main vent pipe and it goes up. There's a couple others upstairs. And then they exit through the roof, right? You got your little pipe sticking up out of the roof. And the squirrels would get in those pipes and they would chew the lead up around them. I don't know why squirrels like to eat lead. And they would chew the lead up and then the squirrels would stuff shit off in these pipes and they would get clogged up. So I go to Mr. Bob's, we go behind his kitchen. I about figured out where all these vent pipes are. Cut a little hole in the drywall, get some access to the vent pipe, cut the vent pipe, put a clean out fitting on it, and I'm gonna put an inspection panel back. And that's what I did with all of them so I could always get back in there and blow that vent out. So then I take my air compressor in there. I had made myself a little fitting that fit right on that clean out pipe and I could just stick my air compressor, my little psh, 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 right up there and then it'll blow stuff out of those vent pipes. As you do when you have a job where you're doing a lot of the same things all the time, you start making yourself tools to make the job easier. Or at least most people do. And so I had made myself some contraptions for doing things on these condos. So I put that little clean out in, glued it in, all that good stuff. Had old Dylan. I said, Dylan, get up there. Now, Bob's condo only had two floors, so it was one of the lower roofs. And so we got a 20-foot ladder. I said, Dylan, you get up there. And I'm going to start putting some pressure on this vent pipe, start blowing some air through this vent pipe, and you tell me if anything comes out of there. All right. And if anything comes out on the roof, we'll clean it out. Usually it'd just be a bunch of leaves and bullshit and fur and whatever the hell, squirrels and stuff down there. Wasn't too tight a seal. It'd just blow out confetti on the roof. We'd sweep the roof off, right? Go on with our day. So Dylan had the little cap off the vent And I start hitting this pressure about 80 PSI on this pipe. And it's just making all the water in the house bubble. It ain't doing nothing. I said, dadgum. Well, it's a little tighter than one I ever had before. So it's bubbling real bad in the sink. So I go get a plunger. And we put a plunger over that sink hole, over that garbage disposal hole, and start giving a little more pressure. Well, now it's bubbling. It's bubbling in the downstairs toilet. It's not bubbling in the upstairs toilet, but it's bubbling in that toilet. So I go get another plunger down off in that toilet. I put a little more pressure. I get about 120, 130 PSI, and when I do, there's this pop. What it was big old mama mockingbird had got down in that vent pipe and got stuck in that vent pipe and died in that vent pipe. And her decomposing body had swole up and clogged the vent pipe. And when I pop put that air pressure on her, it shot that decomposing mockingbird straight up in there. Mockingbird, pretty good sized bird in Texas. All right, it's a pretty good sized bird. Shot that mockingbird straight up in the air, off that roof, and right next door to Mr. Bob was a lady. I can't remember her name. I'm gonna call her Mrs. Beaumont because she always talked about growing up in Beaumont. She was in her 80s too. And all she ever talked about was Beaumont, Texas, how much she loved growing up in Beaumont, Texas, how she was there for the oil boom and all that good stuff. So I just call her Miss Beaumont. Right next door, was Miss Beaumont. Miss Beaumont liked to sit out on her patio in the morning, and she had, I think, about 15 cats inside her house. And Miss Beaumont was an animal lover. She was always out there worried about how people was treating her animals, and she was always fussing with everybody about that sort of thing. And that, wouldn't you know it, that big old decomposing mockingbird shot straight up in the air off that second floor and landed on her patio where she was sitting out there drinking her decaf, and about gave Miss Beaumont a stroke. One, at the terror of seeing the dead bird land on her patio, and then it kind of splatted because it was decomposing and the bird wasn't in great shape by that point. And then me and Dylan, I had to get Dylan off the roof, and while Bob, everything in Bob's house drained all that after great relief. And me and Dylan had to run over there and convince Mrs. Beaumont that nobody was playing a prank on her. Nobody was trying to be funny. We didn't throw a dead bird at her, that we were trying to clear a vent out, and it blew it out of the vent. And Mrs. Beaumont basically demanded that we put that bird in a box and bury it over there by the creek, by the drainage creek, which we just did because sometimes you just did things out there to make old people happy because it just wasn't worth not doing it, you know? Yeah, Miss Beaumont was upset about that dead bird landing on her patio. As we're cleaning up her patio, cleaning up the guts and whatnot from the bird, I mentioned Miss Beaumont. She's an animal person. I said, Miss Beaumont, you know about all the animals out here at the lake. Miss Vent says she's seen an alligator down here this morning. Can you believe that? And Miss Beaumont, weirdly enough, kind of quiet. An alligator? I said, you ever seen an alligator? She said, well, you know, I just can't even recall. You can't recall if you've seen an alligator here? I feel like that's something we'd all remember. Thought that was kind of weird. Anyways, get done my work day, go home that evening. Mr. Bob put a little extra money in my pocket because I blew that dead bird, got all his drains working out again. And I had hung out after work with Mr. Bob, chit-chatting with him a little bit, as I did a lot in those days. And get home about 8, 9 o'clock that evening, I get a phone call from Steve Durrell. Hey, answering service just called me. Somebody else done seen an alligator down there. I said, what? He said, yep, fell down the boardwalk. I don't remember the guy's name. Called, said, so he seen an alligator about 8 foot down there, tried to go after his dog. I said, what? No, how's nobody else seeing this huge alligator also do this magic trick to get up on the boardwalk and get these dogs, right? I know they're durable creatures and they can do some stuff, but I just ain't buying them. I'm like, boy, there ain't no damn alligator out here. I'll run out. So I run back out the property at night, check. Sure enough, ain't no damn alligator out there. This guy, I talked to him, he's swearing God, he's a big old alligator. Said he was walking down the boardwalk with his dog and the alligator snapped his dog. And I was like, you know, the water's way down there though, right? And he's like, well, I don't know what they're capable of. I said, man, I don't know about this. I feel like y'all are trying to feed me a story. You know what I mean? So I ain't seen no alligator. Now, like I said, I knew there's some over. There was a guy I used to go fishing with. Everybody around there called Catfish. And Catfish lived out there on one of them properties. And Catfish was a general ne'er-do-well, but Catfish had been a fishing guide all his life. He's a hell of a man, reeling huge catfish all day long from Lake Conroe, Lunker, Stripers. He was a hell of a fisherman. And me and him been fishing up on that north end in his little boat. And that's what, this is what Catfish would do. So all the fishing guides out there at Lake Conroe knew him, and they knew he knew where to find a good fish. And some fishing guides would follow Catfish around, try to find his holes. And so what Catfish would do is he had this little skiff flat bottom boat, and he knew that north end, that stubble field area with all the stumps real good. And Catfish would be out there fishing, see them guys kind of following him from spot to spot. And he would take them way off in stubble field and get them off in there in them stumps. And then he had a route he had figured out how to get out of there real quick. And then he'd floor it and take that little flat bottom boat and haul ass out of them stumps and leave these idiots with their big boat stuck off in the stumps so he could go enjoy the rest of his fishing. He did it with me. One more, me and him was in the boat and they was following us. He was getting aggravated with it. He said, come on. So we went off in the stubble field. We go way off these stumps. We throw a couple lines out like we're fishing. He's like, don't get too serious. Keep your line short. And sure enough, we see them big boats wheedling back there. And they got to make small talk now because we're so close together. One of them, these are the guys with the NASCAR suits and all the gear, and the, you know, the fancy boats, and me and Catfish in cutoffs and t-shirts. And they come out there, and I remember one morning they said, they look over, one of them hollers over at Catfish, what y'all fishing with? And Catfish reeled that line in real quick. He said, throw your pole down. I reeled mine in, threw it down. He looked over, he goes, skill, mother effer. He cranked that engine up and out of that stubble filled lake and left them idiots sitting back there trying to figure out how to get out of them stumps. But Catfish told me he's seen an alligator up there in them stumps before. So I believe Catfish not the type of fella to just make up a story, you know? So I was like, man, there's probably some of them up there. Well, at the other end of the boardwalk by the little drainage creek, I had to, that little part of the boardwalk was falling apart, and there was a bridge that went across to where the country club pool and all that stuff was for the residents to walk over. And that little bridge was falling apart. They wanted me to go down there and fix that bridge. We'd had a bad storm. It was all jacked up. So I was going to go down there and rebuild that bridge and that little end of the boardwalk. And of course, the bulkhead was all jacked up, so I had to dig it out and fix the bulkhead and fix the deadheads and put some new boards in the bulkhead. And all. It was big old, it was going to take me about a month to get it all done by myself, you know. So I had the bulkhead all tore apart down there in pieces, and I had the boardwalk all torn apart, had it all caution taped off, and I was rebuilding that bridge. And this has been going on, I've been working on it about a week, and we'd got two or three more calls about this alligator. And every time somebody called about this alligator got bigger. Every time somebody called about this alligator got bigger and scarier. And I'm down there working on that bridge one morning, and I have to get down in the water to do some stuff. Now, the water's only about, at this time, it's a little bit over knee deep. So I got to get down in the water and work on the bottom of this bridge. I'm down there in the water doing my stuff, prying and bending. Got Dylan over there cutting some boards for me. And I'm getting ready to attach them all with my little Ryobi impact drill. Right? You see, it's one of them little, the old blue ones, man. They're real loud. Right? So I'm getting ready to attach, I'm going to drive in some, what you call it, carriage bolts. I'm using carriage bolts to put this whole, lag bolts, not carriage bolts. So I'm about to, I've done drilled everything beforehand, and so now I'm about to come put in these big lags to hold everything together. And that whole underside of that bulkhead's open, so the water's just flowing under there. And I get my impact drill, and I start putting that first lag in, that da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And this little, it was probably, I would say, between 2.5 and 3 foot long, honestly. It was about like that. Alligator. Come out from under that bulkhead at Mock Jesus, because that drill was scaring the piss out of that thing. He just swam up the water and went straight up the edge of the boardwalk and around the boardwalk. The same where everybody's been telling me they've been seeing an alligator, he swam that same pattern, getting the hell away from that drill. I said, boy, first of all, none of y'all can measure an alligator. But damn if there ain't actually a damn alligator down here. You know what I mean? I was just as surprised as probably any of them was, but I didn't exaggerate the size of the alligator. I said, that little tiny alligator, that's the one everybody says trying to eat their dogs. Y'all shitting me? Well, I called Steve Durham up and said, man, there is a damn alligator out here, but it's the littlest alligator you ever seen in your life. I said, I scared it with a drill. It's scared of my drill. I scared the piss out of that thing this morning. He said, well, you're going to have to do something about the alligator. We can't have an alligator out there. I said, we don't have a wildlife person or something we can call? What I know a lot about building decks and repairing drywall. I don't know F all about catching alligators. You know, that was not part of the job description. Well, they ain't got money in the budget right now to hire a wildlife relocator or anything. And unless it, you know, does some damage, the lake people aren't going to come out and deal with it. So we're going to need you to deal with that alligator. And that was just kind of how Steve was. This is your problem. Good luck with it. Damn. And so they weren't going to hire somebody to relocate. They just want me to run off an alligator. I don't know how the hell you run off an alligator. What? Do you tell it bad alligator jokes till it leaves? I don't know. I go over and talk to Mr. Bob. Mr. Bob says, well, Jimmy Jerry, a lot of times when there's a nuisance animal coming around, there's a reason for it. The animal's coming there for a reason. He said, a wild animal like an alligator wouldn't be come up here around all these people unless there was a reason for him to come up here. Mr. Bob was smart, right? Mr. Bob said, you know, I was on the internet, and I seen these little cameras these guys set up out in the woods to see when the deer is eating their corn and stuff. And he said, I bet you get you some of them cameras down there at the, hell, it don't matter. Athletic Supply. I keep wanting to say Amazon. That ain't it, but it starts with an A. He said, I bet you can go over there and get you some of them game cameras. So I called Steve Durham up. I said, I found out this place over here got these old game cameras run on D cell batteries, a little SD card, and I can get two cameras and the SD cards, about $60 property approved purchase. He said, yeah, just take the, I had a little credit card I could use. He said, run on down there, get you them game cameras. Sure enough, boy, so I run off down there. And Academy. Well, I knew it was going to come to me sooner or later. It's a sporting goods store called Academy. We have, I don't know if they're everywhere, but we got them in Texas. And fishing supplies and boating supplies and all kind of athletic, boxing gloves and all that kind of shit. They got it all. And so I go over to Academy and I get these little game cameras and I set one up kind of down there by where I'm working, right? Because that's where I've actually seen the thing. And then I set another one up just a little further down the boardwalk past Mr. Bob's house because Mr. Bob promised me he'd keep an eye on the camera, make sure nobody steal the camera. I leave them cameras out there overnight. Next day when I come to work, I collect the cameras, collect the SD cards out of them, get home late that night, pull them pictures up, start trying to figure out what's happening. Sure enough, Boy, right before I get to work, too, because I usually come to work about 6 a.m. back in, 6:30 a.m. And right about 5:59, 5:40 a.m., sure enough, these cameras show this little 3-foot alligator just swimming along, just following the boardwalk, going towards that creek. Lo and behold, when them alligators get to Miss Beaumont's house, Miss Beaumont, on the camera, is standing out there on the boardwalk, holding a bag of something, throwing stuff to the alligator. Miss Beaumont out here feeding out. The alligator, she don't recall, she's out there. I run these cameras about a week. Every morning, Miss Beaumont out there, 5:30 in the morning, feeding this freaking alligator. So I had to go over to Miss Beaumont's house. Miss Beaumont, we set these cameras up to try to catch this alligator everybody's been calling us about, and I see you out here feeding it in the morning. Oh, yeah, well, baby's got to eat. Miss Beaumont been out there feeding that thing chicken gizzards every morning. That alligator come around every morning looking for them chicken gizzards like she had a pet alligator. I said, Miss Beaumont, you can't feed an alligator. You can't. The alligator's got to go, and somebody's going to kill it. You're going to get that thing killed. I was trying to appeal to the animal sense of her. You're going to get that thing killed, come over here looking for food. You can't be doing that no more. I do what I want. I said, boy, I called Steve Durham right back. I said, boy, y'all need to do something about her. Y'all going to have a talk with her, whoever owns that condo, whatever's going on over there. She can't be feeding this freaking alligator. So he said, oh, we'll look into it. We'll see what we can do. I said, but here's where he comes. He comes down here every morning. So he would come down there where she would feed him. I say him. I just assume he's a him. Maybe it's a her. Where she would feed him. And he would gobble up that food she was throwing them chicken gizzards. And then he would go down there where I was working on that bulkhead and hang out under that bulkhead, I guess maybe digest his food. And then you would see later on he would go out and around the driving course of the golf club and go back out to deeper water, probably headed to the north end of the lake where he belonged. I said, man, this is the beast of Conroe. A 3-foot alligator. Well, I talked to Bob about it. Bob, what? Man, I don't know how to run off an alligator. But Bob said the funniest thing to me. He said, sometimes, Jim and Jerry, sometimes you just need to make your problem somebody else's problem. He said, if you can figure out a way to make your problem somebody else's problem, then if you don't have the resources to deal with that problem, maybe they'll have to deal with it. And he told me this story about how they were having water supply problems in Libya when he was working over there for Exxon, and how the people at Exxon didn't seem to care about it because it didn't really affect them too much. But he said those of them that were living there residentially were really struggling. And he said they figured out a way to divert water enough that it started causing water problems for filling the tanks over at Exxon. And all of a sudden, Exxon brought in a big crew to dig some deeper water wells and do some better stuff to get the water flowing to everybody. He said, so you might need to figure out how to make this alligator somebody else's problem. It's got a little more money, a little more time, you deal with it. He said, these people are putting it on you. Figure out a way to put it on somebody else. Well, I told y'all right across that little creek was that real fancy country club, right? This is all the rich folks going to that country club. And that country club, boy, be open about 5 o'clock in the morning. People go down there and get their breakfast. You know, guys get out there, hit that driving range early. And they had valet service. The valets would be out there in the morning cleaning the driveway and all that good stuff and cleaning the pools. And so I got down there. One morning I went in to work about 5:20 in the a.m. And I told y'all that drill had scared that little alligator. So I had my Ryobi drill, I had both of them, full batteries. And I eased down around Bob's unit and looked down there, and sure enough, there's Miss Beaumont out there feeding that freaking alligator. I knew she wasn't gonna stop. And she finishes feeding it and she goes off in the house. And I watch him down there where I'm working on that bulkhead in that little shallow creek. I ease down that bulkhead with them Ryobi guns so that I'm I'm in between him and the lake escape. I ease past that bridge, and he's just kind of, he's sitting in the shallows right there, just his head visible, right there at the end of that little drainage creek. And I got right over there where I saw him start to raise his head, and I hit them drills. Boy, I don't know if you've ever seen an alligator run. It's the funniest shit in the world. They stick their legs up stiff and their whole body gets stiff like a board. And they can boogie, especially them little ones. That boogied up out of that ditch, and he started going towards that country club pool. And I hadn't even dawned on me that this might be the solution to my problem. But now I'm laughing. I'm chasing him with them drills. And he run up and around the country club pool, and there was a little hill, and then over that hill, went down in that driveway where them ballets was, and I right up to the edge of that hill, and he scampered up over that hill and took off down there, and then I heard a bunch of yelling in Spanish, and I knew that I had achieved my mission. That alligator run off down in there, and I just eased on back to my truck, right? Like, I didn't know nothing about it. Went on back to the truck, put my drills up. I had my truck parked over there. I had the window down. I could hear all kind of hollering going on at that country club, all kind of hollering, mostly in Spanish, like I said. What I later found out was the alligator, they had the doors open of the front of the country club, the main lobby, because they were mopping the floors and they were cleaning the driveway there, and the ballet guys were out there. And when the alligator run off into the ballet guys, they all got scared and started hollering. The alligator got scared and run right off into the country club. And then the country club, with their country club money, had to call them a wildlife specialist, come down there and tote that alligator, go relocate that alligator. I found all this out because Steve Durham calls me about lunchtime. I said, boy, Jerry, I just heard a crazy story. They said an alligator run right out of Airport South, over the hill, and straight off into ballets and off into the country club. And they had hired somebody. Well, you don't have to know anything about that, do you? What time? He said about 6 a.m. this morning. I said, boy, Steve, I don't usually get there about 6:30. I must have missed all the excitement. I seen a bunch of cars down there at the ballet. I said, boy, I don't reckon I know anything about that. He said, Jerry, security tells me you came in at 5:20 this morning. Oh, I must have been a little early this morning, Steve. Hell, I forgot I had to come in and work on that bulkhead. Boy, alligator run into the country club. Boy, don't that just beat it all? He said, don't that just beat it all? I said, you know, I hadn't heard nothing about it, Steve, but I hope it's the one that's been coming around here giving me problems. And he said, yeah, let's hope for that. And hung up, and that was the end of the Beast of Conroe. Thanks to a little guidance from Mr. Bob and a Ryobi impact. And Miss Beaumont ended up dying like a year. She was very old, like a year. But I thought it was so ironic. She ended up dying from a fire ant bite. And funny enough, we were spraying for fire ants. We were having fire ant problems down there. We were spraying for fire ants. And we asked her if we'd come in her unit and spray for fire ants. And she was worried about her cat. She didn't want to spray them for fire ants because of the cat. She didn't want poison around the cats. Even though the stuff we were using was supposed to be non-toxic for pets and stuff, she wasn't going to have it. And then she got bit by a fire ant and had an allergic reaction to it and passed away. So, I mean, she was an animal lover to the end. All of them. Oh, Lord have mercy. Let's wrap that up. That's enough of my nonsense today. Hope you guys are having a good Sunday. Let's do some testimonials, if you will. Testimonials, if you will, Daddy. Me and Cody, we've been down here. Yeah, I better stop that. I get off into dusty roads, I'll just get stuck in it. Testimonials, if you will, Daddy. Testimonials got words. You got to have words to do testimonials. Where are they? I know I pulled these things up and saved them. Here they are. Testimonials are, I'm still doing it, or comments from last week's episode. In last week's episode, I was just feeling rough, so I told y'all some fishing stories, and then gave a little closing sermon about the ways this little cat had inspired me. No, that wasn't last week. Hell, it don't matter. We'll figure it out. At Wayne Havens. Oh, Wayne Havens is my old buddy, man. He's here in the Houston area. I think he may be out by Baytown or something, but just about any time I'm local, Wayne comes out and supports, comes to the show. And me and Wayne was in the comedy scene together, 15, 20 years ago. I was kind of already in the scene. He'd start coming around doing the open mic, and I always liked Wayne. He was a mechanic. I thought he was pretty funny, and, you know, you always want to see another good old boy in the comedy scene. And I always got along with Wayne real good. So this is my old buddy, Wayne Havens. JW, you almost killed me this morning, Monday. I usually cannot be on live for the podcast because that's family day. So I do usually listen on my way into work Monday mornings. I also have a chronic health issue. I deal with asthma and COPD. Most days it is under control, but once in a while I need to visit the ER to get it under control. Sunday night was one of those days. I got home at 3 a.m. I got up and popped on the wrecking yard and started my 45-minute drive to work. The story about the gas station restroom had me laughing, choking, and trying to catch my breath. My dumbass has my impaler in my front pocket, so I cannot stop laughing or breathing. I damn near had to pull over before I got my inhaler out. I don't think I've laughed that hard since your last live show in H-Town. You're not the only one that does not feel a connection when visiting the headstones of loved ones. The time I visited my grandparents' graves, I felt out of place, kind of like I'm not really supposed to be there. Very happy to see Ophelia's rapid progress and find it hard to believe your empathy was called misguided. Anywho, keep up the good work and looking forward to the book when it comes out. We're rooting for you and, of course, Ophelia. Yeah. Yeah, and I don't want anybody to think I was trying to come down too hard on David when I was talking about the misguided and stuff. I understood what David was talking about. I 100% understood. Sometimes, out of mercy, you gotta do something like that. I grew up in the stick. I'm well aware. I've had to provide that mercy at times. It's not a fun job, but sometimes you do got to do it. I just don't think this was one of those times. Well, I know it wasn't, because cats recovered tremendously. And that's all I was trying to say, is that some of the wisdom with wielding the power of knowing when to apply that mercy is also knowing when not to apply it. I wasn't trying to come down on David. David's a longtime fan of the show, and I don't think he particularly meant anything called, saying I'm misguided or whatever. He was just saying he looks at it differently than I do. And that's okay. There's room for all kinds of different viewpoints here, and we can disagree on stuff and all still love each other and show each other kindness. Wayne, thank you for the compliment on my story. Sorry it choked you up. I hope you are feeling better. I have dealt a little bit with COPD. Thankfully, it seemed to go away after I quit smoking cigarettes, but I know a lot of people that struggle with it, and that is not a fun one. That's what took out Leonard Nimoy. That's how we lost Mr. Spock. Mr. Spock succumbed to COPD. Oh, Wayne. Yeah, Ophelia's just killing it. Well, she's just killing it. And I feel that gravestone thing, there's a couple other people mentioned that. It made me feel a little less alone about that. At Camp Cat 6089, I feel that about visiting the grave. I love Dad and really don't mind going to see the headstone. I prefer to keep him in my heart and visit the places he lived and enjoyed. Thanks for all the great memories you share. It makes me think of the farm. So thank you for writing this, Camp. I'm the same way about that stuff. Y'all make me feel better because I was kind of feeling like I was a little bit of a weirdo about that. And it's nice to know that I'm not alone in that, because cemeteries don't freak me out. I don't particularly have any kind of feeling there, but I'm also a weird guy. I'm a weird sort of Christian in that I don't really believe in heaven and hell and a lot of the stuff that a lot of Christians believe in. And that's neither here nor there. I'm not here to espouse my beliefs, but I don't really believe in that stuff. That those are not fundamental things, I believe, that are true about how I feel about it. Doesn't matter. I don't believe in it. So going to those places, I don't think anything's there. I know that the physical body my mother inhabited is in that box underneath the ground there, but I don't have no connection to that. My connection to my mother is the very spirit of her, and I read this article, a really interesting scientific article many years ago, where they discussed the way your heart beats and how that starts from a spark, and that's an electric spark that creates your heartbeat. And nobody knows where that electric spark comes from, that initial spark. And we know from science, we know energy does not die, it just changes forms. And when your physical body dies, that electric spark goes away. But we know energy doesn't die, so where does it go? It changes form. And at some point, all energy becomes everything around us, because everything here is composed of energy. All living matter is composed of energy. So my belief in whatever happens after we're gone is sort of rooted in this belief that all these things that have gone before us are still a part of this earth and still around us at all times and every time. And that my mother's spirit is not tied to this stone in the cemetery in Kilgore, Texas. My mother's spirit is in the raindrops that hit my face, is in the sting of the sun when it's a little too hot. My mother's spirit is in the birds flying through the backyard. My mother's spirit is in the occasional dragonfly I see hovering around. She's all around me all the time. She's a part of everything now. And that's just sort of the way I feel about it. And feel free to call me a kook or a nut job, but just telling you kind of how I look at things. So I'm with you guys. The headstones don't do nothing for me. And I'm of course respectful when I go out there and respectful to other people that do observe that tradition. It just isn't for me. And I think sometimes people just need a place to focus sometimes people just need a quiet place to focus and speak to their people that are gone. Not necessarily that they believe they're there, but it's a quiet place for them to go and focus on the loss and focus on this person that they miss so much. Not so much that they actually believe that that person's spirit is hovering around, you know. Anyways, before we get too deep in my bullshit, let's move along. At Jake of All Trades, Master of Fun, our old buddy Jake. I, too, am glad you found that kitten and took care of it. Also, I can't stop laughing at the image of your dad riding that cooler or old Jason mating his boat in his truck. My favorite image about that always is me walking out of that bar after spilling the beans and seeing Jason go after Bo. I mean, boy, they say he throwed him all around that joint. And I will never... There will be a few images I think I see towards the end of my life, and I think my father, eyes big as dinner plates, sliding down that hill in that cooler will be one of those things. All right, let's wrap this thing up, get you guys on to the rest of your Sunday evening. I don't know what I'm doing this evening. I got some content to film today, but I think I may take it easy, play a little video games. And I forgot we got a package to open. Let's get this package open. Let's see here. Ooh. Oh, Freedom Knife is just cutting beautifully now. What is this? No note. Boy, I tell you, I bet you nobody is happier about Amazon's success than whoever makes all the cardboard boxes in the world. Lord, I think they have single-handedly revived the cardboard box industry. Look at that. Well, it doesn't have a note on it. I don't know who sent them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24 smiles, 24 more Hot Wheels for our Driven Dreams .org charity drive, raising die-cast cards for little kids who ain't got a lot to smile about. We're going to be doing our big day of giving here very shortly here, coming up November. I think we're trying to do it November 11th. Of course, I'll document that all for you. Thank you so much, whoever sent those. I wish they would put a note on it and tell me who our wonderful benefactors are. But that's 24 more smiles to add to our already 1,602 smiles we're doling out this year. And that's going to put us at 1,626 smiles for our day of giving. And the packages have slowed down. This may be the end of it. But I'm feeling pretty good about we done some magic here this year. God bless y'all. You just make my country ass smile, and I love you so much for it. Y'all have really, really, it's one thing to preach a message of kindness. It's another people to see people respond to it and bring more kindness in the world as a result of it. And by God, if y'all just don't give me hope for the mission, I appreciate it. Let's wrap this booger up. I was thinking about this problem. I've always, when I write these episodes out for y'all, I sit down and try to think, is there anything I could have learned from this? Or what did I learn from this? Something I could share. And there's a kind of man that don't like to wait. He sees a problem. His first instinct is to square shoulders, grab the biggest stick or tool in reach, and go fix it by sheer will and profanity. I've been that kind of man a good deal of my life. I was raised by folks who believed motion was the same thing as progress. And if something's broke, you don't sit around staring at it. You get to work. And that's a fine rule when you're changing tires or patching fences or boardwalks, but life's got a way of throwing you problems that don't tighten down with a ratchet or a nail gun. Sometimes the thing you're trying to fix ain't metal or wood or leaking water. Sometimes it's living, breathing, and looking right back at you with a mind of its own. And the harder you come at it, the more it shows you what a fool you look like swinging. There's a danger in being headstrong. It feels righteous, feels like action. But what it really is most times is just noise wearing a work shirt. We live in a world that rewards the loud and the quick. People cheer for the one who charges in, not the one who takes a minute to study the current. But every busted knuckle in my life's come from thinking I could outmuscle a situation that really just needed me to listen a minute. See, not every problem yields to force. Some require finesse. Some require patience. And some just need to be redirected, nudged towards the folks who got the tools, the time, and the kind of money that makes solutions appear like magic. That's a hard truth for a blue-collar soul to swallow. Because we're raised to believe if it's broke, it's ours to fix. But sometimes the best thing you can do is make the problem visible to the people who built the system that caused it. Sometimes justice ain't about winning the fight. It's about getting it seen by the right eyes. That's what I try to do in my words. I try to take a working-class ache, the grind, the worry, the pride, and I translate it into a language the folks with the microphones can't ignore. I can't afford lobbyists or billboards, but I can tell a story clear enough that a man in a suit might feel it in his chest. That's my version of redirecting the gator. You don't kill it, you just got it somewhere that the world has to reckon with it. And that's where the thunder lives, right there. In the moment you quit fighting for noise and start fighting for meaning, when you quit throwing punches and start choosing targets, when you realize wisdom ain't weaker than strength, it's the grown-up version of it. So yeah, sometimes I still come in hot. Old habits die slow. But I'm learning, the older I get, that every swing costs something. And some fights need a scalpel. not a sledgehammer. If you find yourself facing a problem tonight, one that don't scare, don't move, don't blink, take a breath. Study the water. Figure out where it's flowing. Maybe you ain't meant to wrestle it. Maybe you're just meant to steer it somewhere it can be handled. That ain't cowardice. That's craft. That's survival with style. I'm trying to live that way now. Less noise, more aim. Less rage, more reckoning. And if I can pass that lesson along, somebody out there hears this, decides to stop swinging and start thinking, then maybe I finally beat that damn alligator after all. I'm JW, and I love you.